Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, we have a good old friend of mine, April Wachtel, the founder of Swig and Swallow, and an all-around amazing bar person. And, you know, like, it's really great to have you in the studio, first of all, and welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's awesome. Before the show, we were talking about presentation on cocktails. And lately, you've been doing this kind of like Instagram campaign of cocktail photography, but they're all mocktails, right?
Yeah.
They're all non-alcoholic cocktails.
Uh-huh.
So what was the inspiration for that?
Oh God, there's a few things that I suppose had motivated me to do this. One is firstly, I just love beautiful cocktails. I love beautiful food.
Sure.
I'm somebody who eats with my eyes.
Like, oh, yeah.
I also eat with my mouth, obviously, and a lot.
That must hurt.
But so this is something that it's just, if I see a beautiful cocktail across the room, I just want to go and consume it. So that's one thing is
Well, actually, as a bartender, too, you want that to happen. You want your cocktails to, like, go through the room and create a domino effect. It's like, you know, people talk about, like, not liking to make mojitos. I'm like, dude, it's a really easy drink and you can make it really pretty if you just know how to do it the right way, the actual right way. And then but it's always like a chain reaction, you know, it's like spreads like wildfire across the bar room. Someone sees a mojito and they're like, oh, actually I want one of those too. Or like a Ramos gin fizz even.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And of course, depending on where you work, certain people will say one or the other is very hard to make. And obviously it depends on how much you put into it. But, I think that notion for me of creating something beautiful and then presenting it to somebody and saying, hey, I made this for you. To me, that's why we do this in the first place. And so that's something that I've just been experimenting with styling cocktails at home, with taking photographs of them. I had, I'm not sure if I can say this on the show. I had the balls to, can I say that?
Yeah, okay. Fuck yeah, you can.
Okay. All right. So I had the balls to purchase a camera and some lighting equipment. I have not had the balls to really dive into that. So these were really all like iPhone photos. But so that's one thing. And then I think another thing is that I love being in the beverage industry. I love going out and having great cocktails, great wine, great beer, et cetera. I don't always feel like consuming that when I'm out in that environment, but I also don't want to sacrifice that community aspect where, you know, where you live in that space and you know people in that space and you don't necessarily want to give that up and say, I'll just, you know, be drinking a soda water or I'll just be at home, you know, drinking my mocktail. You kind of like to be in that environment and have the ability to consume that too.
Yeah. I mean, like to me, it's like I drink iced tea like some people drink whiskey.
Yeah.
I love lemonade and I love like iced tea. I love these. I don't drink coffee anymore. I can't. It just makes me crazy.
I had a little too much today, FYI, for the show.
But I mean, like to me, it's like if you're sitting around the house and you want a delicious drink, it's like why not? Where does that stigma lie? You know,
sure.
It's like you can, like you were saying, like hanging around the house, make yourself a mocktail.
Yeah,
you're gonna be probably more pleased because you might be a little more productive.
Yeah. And then on the other side too, you know, I'm somebody who, I love exercise. Like it has to be a part of my, hopefully daily.
You're a heavy, avid rock climber, right?
Yeah. And recently like a lot of yoga, but the health side is very important to me,
sure.
But I'm constantly disappointed too, where you seek out juice bars or, you know, healthy eating places and it's always incredibly bright lights. You know, you've got the sound of the juicer running in the background, obviously. That has to happen unless you have, like, a cold, you know, a cold press juicer. And, you know, it's just like, you know, screaming children everywhere. Like, the point is the ambiance is not awesome. And then the juice is just like put into a plastic container and then off you go. So yeah. I think that my question is more like, why doesn't this exist where you can have the community, where you can have the beautiful creation, where you can have that experience and that hospitality, you know, and have something that's, again, it's a non-alcoholic option if you'd like, or a low proof option if you'd like.
Absolutely. I mean, it's become more of a thing. You're starting to see it more on menus too. Like, I was just at Seamstress, Pam Wisnitzer's place, uptown. Don't ask me what I was doing up there. That's so weird that I was above 14th Street even, but she has a section on the menu. Julie Reiner at Clover Club and Flatiron both have sections on the menu always of mocktails. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a very nice like step of service, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like you're servicing the people who like roll their eyes at like a mocktail order when it comes through, they're like, oh god, what kind of variation of a lemonade I'm gonna make?
Sure.
It's like, and that's usually what it is. It's mm-hmm. some sort of like, you know, I know that I do some sort of mojito variation. Mm-hmm. Typically, you know, I'll use like elderflower syrup or something mm-hmm. like that, and it's always like very well regarded, but. To me, it's, I don't know, it's like, it's one of those, you're cutting out a giant, like, chunk of your clientele mm-hmm. by, like, not, you know, like, not supplying them with the option, mm-hmm. you know.
And it's in particular, it's really interesting to me that, you know, we're talking about some of the best, and this is not, by the way, meant to be a criticism to any phenomenal program whatsoever, but, you know, some of the best most skilled bartenders in the world are here in New York. And it's just like the way the culture has evolved. It's you order that and the response is oftentimes helpful, but typically like, you know, you have people who are making these insanely delicious cocktails who have the capacity to make these amazing mocktails and just kind of like turn on the, like, I don't know what I'm doing hat.
You know, to me, that is like, I learned something very important from a group of restaurants and bars in DC. Mm-hmm. Something that, like, it's kind of like an overlying, like, overarching theme of some of these places like Comey and Little Cerro. They have VIPs coming in all the time, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you're basically, everyone's a VIP, right? But the VIPs that come in, they don't like fawn over them. Mm-hmm. They really pay attention to their guests. You know, which I think is really important because that makes it more impressive, mm-hmm. you know. So people are coming totally. In to have like, you know, the best Negroni or Manhattan, mm-hmm. you know, that New York can provide. It's actually, to me, it's more important, you know, thinking about it in that way where it's like, all right, well, the mocktail, if someone for any number of reasons doesn't drink alcohol, mm-hmm. can't drink alcohol, mm-hmm. it's like you really have to impress those people.
Sure.
You know, that's where the focal point should shift to, I think.
And it's interesting, too, because I read the book, Danny Meyer's book, Setting the Table, mm-hmm. maybe five times years ago, right? I mean, I love the book. I thought it had, you know, infinite amounts of pearls of wisdom, you know, that are applicable to every industry, right? Not just hospitality. And I remember him saying something which really echoed something I'd been thinking internally for a long time but just had never voiced, which is, you know, the individual person coming to the bar or to the restaurant is the person you want to impress the most. And that's consistently the person who is also neglected, at least in my experience, in bars and restaurants. Because that person comes in, people say, and this drives me bananas, people say, oh, just one. Like, if I hear that, I'll smile about it, but I will be internally freaking out. just FYI.
Yeah, like you're just having water. It's like this weird, like, backhanded sales kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of weird. Yeah, but the just one, you're like, all right, dude, I like to, like, go out by myself. The other night I went to a barbecue place in Park Slope. And, like, I wanted to go by myself. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hide out, actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to...
Totally.
You know,
totally.
You know how it is. I mean, like, you know, like, most of the service industry in New York City. So sometimes you just want to hide out.
Yeah.
But when they asked me, they were like, just one? I'm like, yeah, man. I do want to be just one.
You're
right,
like
now.
My head just fucking exploded.
But yeah, it's like don't make me feel weird about it. Yeah.
Well, it's not only that. So the reason I think it actually connects to the mocktail thing is that for whatever reason, and again, I think it's different reasons in every establishment, but I think there is a perception of like either that person is going to take up half the seats you would need for a two top, mm-hmm. or they're not going to spend as much money, or you know, I don't know what the other reasons to not service that person similarly is or are, yeah. but I think it's the same with the mocktail. But that is like that person has basically said to you, "I'm here because I want to be here, and I want to be here so much. I don't need to drag other people with me." You
right?
Know?
Yeah, totally.
And so I'm it's like, the same you know, thing.
Honestly,
with the mocktail.
My thing is like when I go out by myself, I overorder.
Oh yeah.
So it's
oh,
like
yeah.
Whenever I see someone solo at my bar, it's like, all right, cool, man. I think we're right here together.
Yeah.
You know, like, all right. I mean, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, it's one person. Maybe you don't get the steak for two. I'm like, I get two like, steaks for two, man. Yeah. I like totally. When I went out to the barbecue place the other night, I got like wings and nachos and like all kinds of terrible food. Mm-hmm. like just not good for you. Like,
sure.
we're sitting across the studio right now talking about, you're like very healthy, and I'm talking about the nachos that had like queso dip all over.
No, hold on a second. Let me just like stop for 1 second and say one of the reasons that I love this idea is that I think like I pork belly is one of my favorite things in the world, and
oh, yeah.
I love fried food, fried chicken, special spot in my heart. So one of the really positive things about making those decisions, like when you're craving whatever, like a juice forward beverage, mm-hmm. if you can make that healthy decision then, you can totally make the way worse decision later. You know, like
yeah,
it just
yeah.
gives you more flexibility.
I was talking to a buddy of mine yesterday, and he was like, dude, he's like, I go to the gym every day. He's like, I go to the gym every day. He's like, well, at least five days a week. And he's mm-hmm. like, the reason why? He's like, I love drinking beer.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I have
yeah.
to go to the gym if I want to drink beer.
Totally, totally.
And I was like, right on, man. I get it. He's like, you don't work as a bartender, so you're not like constantly like moving kegs around. It's like, that's my gym.
You know? Sure.
But so like going back to the mocktails, like they're very impressive. Like if anyone, like you should definitely, we should talk about like your Instagram handle so people can follow it and know what we're talking about here. But they're styled like, they're very, very beautiful drinks.
Thank you.
And like I do some cocktail styling for different publications, but like looking at your Instagram feed, it's like, there's some really, really whimsical, like amazing styles of garnishes. You know, like it's to me, like I was working at ZZ's Clam Bar for a while with Thomas Wan and Brian Miller and Phil Ward. And they, you know, Thomas has a crazy vision, you know, like you've been at ZZ's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you understand like the presentation of it. You
sure.
know, it's so impressive. The drinks
totally.
Are fairly simple, mm-hmm. but the presentation is just outstanding, mm-hmm. right? So to me, it got me thinking like outside of the actual drink itself and like more about like the garnishes and presentation. And yours, you're doing a lot of like droppers of like oils mm-hmm. and bitters and stuff like that and like on top of the drinks. And like it's really, really incredible. Are you pulling that reference from like any particular like culinary side or is it just something you've seen like visually like in your travel? You travel a lot.
I have traveled a lot. I actually don't know exactly where it's coming from. I know that, like, I'm a relatively experienced bar person. I've been doing this for like my entire life, but I'm a total novice cooking, and so I'm doing like a lot of flavor exploration in that direction. And so I suppose I'm just trying to integrate the two.
Yeah.
And it's also a general question of like, why don't we see more culinary ingredients incorporated, especially when people are making shrubs but they're not using drops of vinegar. Like
sure.
as garnish, yeah. which I kind of feel like on the presentation side, with the exception of the cloth that I'm using in the background, I do want every garnish or every visual, I guess, additive and not additive like.
Right, right. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Accompaniment.
Yeah. I want it to have a relevant place in the flavor profile as well. So there was actually one that I had taken photos of the other day. I'm forgetting which one. Oh, it was a beet cocktail that had toasted sesame seed, black pepper and salt rim and then sesame oil on the surface. I'm forgetting what the other ingredients were exactly. But I had made these little cucumber slices as an alternative garnish for that. And then I drank the cocktail and I ate the cucumber slices. I was like, damn it. This would have been like, I should have incorporated this somehow because it totally was a palate cleanser. But I had already just drank it. I didn't have any left and I didn't have any time left. So I didn't add it. But I do think it should impact the flavor too.
I think that's cool though. Also, like on the side, like, you know, there's the, was it the ideal cocktail? The classic cocktail that comes with like, it typically comes with a side of almonds.
Ah.
As a snack.
Sure.
I always like that. It's like.
Sure.
The drink is like, kind of like traveling, you know? It's like, it's breaking out of the glass, you know? Uh-huh. I love that idea. I also like sidecars of beer. I think that's pretty cool.
Sure.
But as far as mocktails go, I think there's a cool way of like doing that. I think that's a great idea. You know, one of the first times I went to Myowell, it was when they first opened, Phil was making some drinks and he just took like a cucumber, started slicing it up, threw it on a plate with some lime juice and salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and he's delicious. Like, here you go, little snack. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
You just did that with the stuff that we have behind the bar.
Yeah.
And that was really impressive.
Yeah, totally.
And it had nothing to do with the drink. It was just like cool hospitality kind of, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I like the sidecar of a snack.
No, totally. It's also, it's very weird to me. So I spent a lot of time bartending in Boston. And at the time, anyway, cocktail culture there was totally embedded in restaurants. Mm-hmm. And it's now somehow split out. So there's more cocktail bars that are, they're still connected to food somehow, but they're like a little bit more separate. But coming to New York, and starting to really get into the cocktail scene here, I was just totally shocked that like the cocktail world kind of floats independent of that. And so that, again, being in such a trend-setting space as New York City, it's just confusing to me that there's not more excellent food programs, excellent beverage programs that I guess sort of like coexist, but also really, really heavily influence each other. So part of the oils thing is I really don't see oil cocktails. Although since I started this Instagram feed, a number of my friends have been like, but hey, I do stuff with oil too. I'm like, great. I want to see it.
Yeah.
But that's something that you see that in some of the more contemporary food applications too, where people are just, you know, they're dotting purees or they're dotting oils or whatever it may be. And I think that there's great reason to incorporate that into cocktail culture too.
And there are so many amazing like vinegar and oil companies out there, mm-hmm. that are, I had an article in the Times like 3 years ago and it was about vinegar cocktails. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, so then with the next couple of weeks, I started getting cases and cases of oil and vinegar sent to me from all these distributors and like importers who were just like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are doing stuff with like vinegars and oils. Like, here's our entire like catalog.
Yeah.
And so I have probably like 400 bottles of like vinegar and oil.
Oh my God. Well, if you want to share.
Yeah, I totally will. Totally will.
Cool.
Because there's no way in hell that I'm going to get through all that by myself.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But really nice stuff too. Like 100-year-old balsamics. And like crazy stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane.
I took that
one home. The rest are at Primates.
Got it.
But yeah, I think it's really cool to incorporate, you know, that's something we've talked about on the show before too, is like that relationship with like the front and the back of the house,
mm-hmm.
and how, God, man, it's we've come a long way, but it's still like it's that separation, you know, and we should be working together, you know, because
sure.
I mean, there's so much that we can learn from each other, you know, like the front and back of the house, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to work for most of the time I've been a bartender to work with really awesome chefs and cooks who are like, you know, the door is always open, but, mm-hmm. but I know that it's not always the case, mm-hmm. right?
Of course, of course, of course, of course.
So you're going to do what in my spice rack? Get out of here.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think that part of that, cause I've thought about that a lot as well, but I think that part of that is there, you know, there's this really established food culture with hierarchy that's existed for whatever, you know, a gazillion years,
mm-hmm.
Where it's like, okay, this is the chef, this is their role, this is the sous chef, this is their role, chef de cuisine, blah, 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 blah. And part of that is, you know, is like the we chef thing, mm-hmm. which is like, I will do whatever I'm asked to do, no questions asked. And that training program and that culture of, again, understanding that you have to execute your job according to the demands of of the leader, that hasn't existed in the same way in the cocktail culture anyway. Yeah. Obviously, there's that hierarchy somewhat in wine.
Yeah, yeah, you know? For sure.
But I think that that might be part of it, too, is it's kind of two different cultures that are like holding, not holding hands, they're like holding pinkies.
You know? Yeah, yeah, they're doing like one of those, like kind of just like roaming around the peacock garden hand in hand. Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, I think there's also a lot of, I don't know, I'm probably going to get some hate mail from this, but I think there's like some backlash, too, from the popularity of cocktail culture, like growing so quickly. It's like it plays into the restaurant and bar entity itself. You know, it's like, all right, well, you know, I went to CIA, or you know, and I went, you know, I did some studying abroad, like in the Bordeaux region. I'm like an expert on it, and got like my master sommelier, and like you know, like all right, so this kid who just walked in the bar and like to throw some whiskey in a glass, it's got all this press, you know?
Sure. And I mean, and I get that because
I totally understand it, by the way.
Well, cause you can teach somebody to look like they know what they're doing on the cocktail side of things in an hour to 2 hours. You can, it's just a fact, where to teach somebody how to grill properly or saute properly, or, you know, make a, whatever, a demi-glace, that's a tremendous more a huge amount,
it's
more
incredibly
effort.
Incredibly insane. Like, it's intimidating as hell to me. Like,
sure.
I do one thing really well, and it's actually a really well done burger, because I don't know anything about it.
Eggs? What about eggs?
Eggs? Yeah, it's scrambled.
Scrambled. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. But so I think that there's that. And then, I mean, let's be honest, we're all kind of creatives, and we know creatives are sensitive and ego driven in a lot of ways. And so I think that that's part of it. It's like you're putting yourself on a plate or in a glass, and you know, if the person next to you with a different skill set does that, and you don't have a really solid partnership or collaboration going, I totally see that being a, you know, a pain point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone, like all chefs, are competitive with other chefs,
sure.
And same with the wine world, and same with bartenders. And it's, we don't need to compete with each other, man, across the board. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, there's been several times where I've been asked about, like, you know, why there aren't, like bartending reality shows. And it's just because there's not, it's the lowest drama level of, like, the three of them, if you want to go food, wine, and cocktail stuff, bar stuff. It's like the lowest level of drama, so you can't create like good TV with that, you know.
Well, but I mean, is reality TV generally good TV? I mean,
no, it's not.
It depends on what it is, right? Yeah. Like, because there are
like Amish Mafia. Yeah, I love that show. I
haven't seen it.
Me neither.
I feel like you could totally create some drama, there. But I mean, I think that, like, if anyone attends cocktail competitions, that's like that.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Camera.
I just judged one the other night, and it was intense.
Sure, sure.
I didn't like it.
No, I mean, I think, I don't know. I think the, here's the thing, is collaboration, that mostly does not make good TV in that time frame, like in that formula.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're just like, these people get along great, and they're making a badass product, that doesn't fit well until like a half an hour. You know, people are like, yeah, and what happened? Nothing happened, you know? So that's why it's like...
Someone didn't throw a drink in the other one's
exactly,
face.
Exactly.
Changing the channel now.
Right, but I do think, and this is where, like, I mean, maybe radio is, or maybe radio is not the right place for that, but maybe it's radio, maybe it's, you know, I mean, there's Jiro Dreams of Sushi, that, you know, that sort of thing, which is, I think I could easily see that extended.
Yeah, I think the thing about the documentary style of exposing that information is a hell of a lot better. You know, you don't need a TV show about it, you know, like when it comes to something like that. And if someone like yourself who's worked on like a lot of sides, you've done, like, you still do a lot of like classes at like Astra Center, and you've worked for Bacardi for a long time, and Solbeso, so you've worked on like every, pretty much every side of that industry. Do you see, not to get you in trouble or anything, but do you see a lot of that, like, competitive edge and like, or, I mean, like you're now like, you kind of took a break from bartending for a little while.
Yep.
But now you're heading back into it.
Yep.
Is that because of maybe something that was happening crazy in the industry? Or did you just miss it like crazy? Because I bet you did.
That's a really interesting.
Because we've all missed you behind question. The bar.
Aw. And I did miss it. I think the hours are not for everybody, right?
No, not at all.
And not for everybody for the duration of their life, right?
Right.
But there's something. I think the thing that I missed the most was that ability to again to make something for somebody and to hopefully exceed somebody's expectations and make them feel welcome. And again, say, hey, I made this for you, like specifically.
Right.
And of course, we all know that on the crazy busy nights, that's harder to do because you have less time to spend with each person, right? So there's that. But I don't know. I think it was I really enjoyed many, many, many aspects of the brand work that I did. And I feel like I learned a lot about the industry, about where I think I fit the best, and about what I don't want to do. So I just feel like this phase that I'm in right now is I really wanted to get into a place where I'm really focusing very intensely on certain things that I want to learn. And I think that recently I have done a lot of things that I needed to do for business reasons, and I'm happy to have done that. But I feel like my learning curve has dropped pretty significantly. So I really want to immerse myself again.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I always tell bartenders when I'm training them, I'm like, dude, you just have to taste everything, mm-hmm. you know? And especially mm-hmm. like with what you're doing with cocktails is like, you gotta, with mocktails, is you have to taste everything, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting to me because since you're cutting out the alcohol influence, you're cutting out like a significant amount of flavors that are the cocktails are reliant on, you know? So making a delicious drink without any of these influences it's got to be very difficult, right?
I actually I don't think so. I think, so we are all.
Once you get out of the cocktail mindset, I think it's
easier,
right?
You're liberated. Yeah. I mean, I think so for me, the first couple that I did, you know, I was like, oh, okay, the way you see people make it, the stuff in juice bars is that they just throw a bunch of crap in. Like, they don't, they may measure,
sure.
but we know that fruit is not the same size and vegetable is not the same size,
sure.
fruit to fruit, right? Or piece to piece. So you see people just stuff a bunch of things into the juicer and then out comes something else. And they're like, meh, here you go. This is what I made you, which is the list of the ingredients, right? So I think the first kind of like teeny tiny epiphany that I had was like, okay, I'm gonna juice this all separately. I'm gonna measure. I'm gonna apply the knowledge that I have about cocktails in terms of ratios.
Yeah, the formula,
exactly.
The styles. Yeah,
exactly. To this, and see kind of how it goes. So sorry, what was the question? I just got off on my own little.
No, I was just saying, you know, it's important to taste everything, and like,
oh,
but also,
yeah.
I guess where I was going with that too is like. You've kind of tasted everything as far as the industry goes, too.
Sure.
Like every style of approaching that, you know, it's really important, I think. Also, from like a management style, too, it's really important to know like how like ordering and distribution, like from being on the business side
sure.
Of like, you know, doing the work with Bacardi and stuff like that, like to doing the classes that you do and to being a bartender. It's like very important to know like. First of all, what the cost is and, you know,
sure.
to make sure that you can actually do something and get creative with it at a price that's not going to kill people.
Sure.
And I think, you know, it's funny that we're talking about this today because I've been thinking so much about mocktails lately, mm-hmm. but I don't, like, it's great to talk to you about this because, like, my approach is to take, like, a classic cocktail, but then make it into something non-alcoholic, but
yep.
you just have to completely like disassemble and like look at it in a new way, right? I mean, it's like it's a whole new process.
I would say so. And then something else that I've been thinking about a lot as well is that when you order mocktails in a bar, typically people will say, okay, well, I'm going to adapt because it's juice. I'm going to adapt a sour ratio, right?
Sure.
So I'm going to omit the spirit. I'm going to use a sweetener and a citrus to balance it out, and then I'm going to add whatever else. And that's something that again in my limited Instagram feed on the topic, you know, I've tried to entirely omit syrups, which that is like an interesting restriction. In one, I did a hot cocktail where I incorporated honey. It was honey, I think ginger, some citrus, red pepper flakes, kefir, lime leaves, etc. And that one I did do, I think it was a teaspoon or two of honey into a larger glass, because it really needed that to complete the drink. Mm-hmm. But so I guess back to the kind of original thought is that oftentimes I think when people order soda water when they don't want to drink, they're trying to part do without the calories, part do without the alcohol. And then when you get a mocktail that's half sugar, you're kind of like, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
So that is something that I have thought about a lot, is it's like the point is not to be like bashing you over the head, this is healthy, but it is to say everything I'm going to give you or everything I'm going to incorporate into this is good for you.
Yeah.
And the focus is flavor, just pure deliciousness and beauty. And then second to that is, hey, by the way, this is all made of like totally fresh, just juiced, or again, cold press, if you have a cold press juicer, and can maintain the nutrients for longer. You know, all of this is also really good for you. Like, there's no regrets there.
It's amazing. It's such a beautiful feed. Can you tell them where to find your Instagram?
Yeah. So, so my handle, is that what you call it?
Sure.
I'm like tag handle, whatever nickname is April Wachtel. So it's all one word, April, like the month, Wachtel, Wachtel. And then, the hashtags that I'm using are, a mocktail a day. So a mocktail a day and mocktailia. And mocktail porn, which was given to me by the guys at Rumline down in Miami.
Awesome. Yeah. Was Todd Richmond there?
He has been there, but he was not there.
I usually run into him at the Rumline.
Okay.
Well, cool. It's been so nice to have you on the show today.
This
Unfortunately,
has been awesome.
We're out of time, but I would love to have you back anytime that you're available.
Thanks, Damon. This was wonderful.
Thanks again, April. Okay. All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check in to heritageradionetwork.org for many, many more like it. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.